KMXT in Kodiak. This is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, Sitka herring wraps up without reaching its harvest targets again. We get a preview of the next big fishery for the little fish and preserving the history of our state's canneries. All that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their family. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
For the third time in a half dozen years, Sitka Sound Sacro herring fishery has closed far short of the target harvest level. Fish and game biologist Dave Gordon gave Saners the news Monday afternoon. He says rapid spawning and smaller than usual fish combined to bring the fishery up short again this season.
You know, the market likes a larger fish at this time. The bigger the better as far as sacro herring goes. And with this smaller mix of fish, we knew we might find it difficult to prosecute the entire fishery.
Saners target herring just prior to spawning when the eggs, or roe, are still in skeins inside the females. The sacro is marketed as a delicacy in Asia. Gordon says the department knew that this year would probably be dominated by large numbers of small fish. Last year, biologists found a high percentage of three-year-olds in the Sitka Sound herring stock, the first year that they reach maturity. Gordon says that's good news for the future, but for this season, it meant that there were a lot of four-year-olds around.
We did get one opening in, a second opening, where we did manage to find some larger average weight sizes to harvest, and that quality of the fish during that opening were very good. But from there, it was a downhill.
Gordon does not second-guess himself much, but he does wonder if he waited a day too long between the second and third openings. He says it's a tricky fishery to pull off.
One of the most difficult things about managing the sacro fishery is you have this very narrow window of time to harvest good quality herring when they're ripe and mature to when they spawn. But on top of that, you've got limited capacity to handle the fish, so you can't just go and harvest as much fish as you can, harvest a quota at one time. You have to take it in pieces because there's only so much tendering capacity and processing capacity.
Sacro Saners harvested 10,050 tons in three openings, but fell 4,690 tons short of their harvest goal this season. They experienced similar early closures in 2012 and 13. With the closure of sacro herring at Sitka, Fish and Game in Southeast now turns its attention to other herring fisheries, such as the roe on kelp pound fisheries in Hoonah Sound and Tenekee Inlet, both of which have had poor or closed seasons recently. On the upside, the herring spawn, which contributed to the early end of commercial fishing, has been strong in Sitka Sound, with 42 miles of shoreline spawning observed. Meanwhile, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game released its Togiak herring forecast, and once again the market, not the fish, is likely to be the limiting factor this spring. KDLG's Molly Dishner tells us more.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is expecting about 162,000 tons of herring to show up this spring, which means about 28,000 tons will be available for harvest in the Togiak Sacro fishery. Area management biologist Tim Sands says four processors are planning to operate in the fishery this spring.
Talking to them, we're expecting 21 seine boats and three gillnet boats, and then a daily processing capacity of about 2,300 tons. Mostly, we'll just work through the seine quota, which is 20,000 tons, and that should be 7 to 8 days that they'll be able to harvest all that.
Fish and Game plans to open up the fishery as soon as enough herring is spotted and offer liberal fishing time and area. Like other years in the recent past, it'll be the market, not the herring biomass, that limits the fishery.
I talked to the processors, and there's still all kinds of doom and gloom as far as herring goes. Nobody said anything to indicate it's going to be better than it has been, which is $50 a ton last year.
One change this year? The seine and gillnet fisheries won't be paired.
previously we were supposed to manage so that each gear type, the purse seine gillnet, harvested the first 50% of their quota kind of evenly. And now they're not coupled. So the seiners could catch all theirs and the gillnetters not catch any, and it's fine. We don't have to slow one gear type down to let the other gear type go.
That change, which was made by the State Board of Fisheries in December, reflects the current status of the market. Processing capacity can be limited, and the coupling used to ensure that both gear types got a fair shake. But now that there's little interest from gillnetters, that isn't necessary. In Dillingham, I'm Molly Dishner.
You're listening to the Alaska Fisheries Report. Hear the show online anytime at kmxt.org.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Alaska's shellfish farmers hope a new state mariculture initiative will help boost their businesses, but they warn it's not an easy industry to expand. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld tells us more.
The state began allowing Alaskans to farm shellfish almost 30 years ago. The resulting farms raise scallops, mussels, and several species of clams. In recent years, oysters have gotten more attention. The state lists about 50 shellfish farms, though not all are active. Most are in southern southeast Alaska or Ketchumak Bay near Homer.
I think the market in Alaska has not been fully saturated, so I think there's plenty of room here.
Margot Reve is president of the Jackaloff Bay Oyster Company. She's also active in the Alaska Shellfish Growers Association. She says a lot of sales are within the state, but growers are looking farther away.
I think that some farmers are similar to salmon fishermen, finding that direct sales and online sales can bring a premium that make your farm viable.
The Walker-Mallott administration sees growth potential, too. The governor signed an administrative order in February setting up the Alaska Mariculture Task Force. It's charged with making recommendations for a long-term plan to advance the state's mariculture or ocean farming industry, which, by the way, does not include farming fish, which is against Alaska law. Barbara Blake, special assistant to the lieutenant governor, says the task force will play an important role in industry growth. She notes other shellfish farming states have that in common.
No state has been successful without first coming to the governor's office and having the governor lead an initiative that would kind of bring all of those resources together, pull all of those who are interested or who are already developing in that world to one table to help develop a framework that would be statewide, you know, individual or even region-wide.
The idea came from Julie Decker, executive director of the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation. She says the panel will learn from experienced farmers and outside industry experts.
And we think that we can apply mariculture in Alaska in a way that Alaskans want it to be applied and do something really positive that's good for our communities, the environment, and, you know, the economy as well.
Not that there aren't significant barriers to the business. Farmers say isolation, cold water temperatures, and business loan limitations have slowed development. But Decker says there's a new crop that could help build the industry. It's seaweed and kelp, which are in demand for food and beauty products.
It's a very short turnover, 6 to 9 months, and so you have more of a cash flow involved for farmers instead of waiting 3, 4 to 10 years or so for a crop, depending on the species.
Farmer Reve says it's worth trying.
We actually on our farm are experimenting with it right now, and I think that there's some potential there. There's a lot to be worked out in the processing side and the shipping side.
The new Mariculture Task Force will involve shellfish farmers, industry associations, the university, and state officials. The cost of its work will come out of existing agency budgets, so it will require no new appropriations. Officials are in the process of choosing its 11 members. Their recommendations are due within about 2 years. In Juneau, I'm Ed Schoenfeld.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by commercial fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
The history of the seafood industry will receive more study statewide thanks to a series of grants which will go to groups and individuals for projects such as preservation assessment of the Diamond Inn cannery in South Naknek, a series of radio segments about Sitka's cannery history that the Sitka History Museum will produce, and photographic histories of abandoned canneries on Kodiak Island. The Alaska Historic Canneries Initiative is an Alaska Historical Society project which was launched last year as a way to give more exposure to cannery history through documentation, preservation, and education. KMXT's Kayla DeRoche has the story.
Grantham says they've been fundraising for 2 years to support what they see as an understudied aspect of the fishing industry's past.
As it is right now, there's not really any organization that focuses specifically on seafood industry history. It's something that's been really neglected. People always are talking about the economics of the fisheries, they're talking about the biology of the fisheries, but when you talk about the history or the culture of the industry, there's really very little that is talked about or is funded.
She says the Canneries Initiative received 17 grant applications, and each grant winner will get $1,000.
And these grants are for organizations, businesses, or individuals. We wanted to make it really open so that we could support really a gamut of cannery history projects around the state. And we have awarded 7 of the grants to really all the major fishing regions of Alaska. We have some that are going to Bristol Bay. We have a couple in the Kodiak region and some in Southeast as well.
Grantham says 3 institutions and individuals won grants to research in Kodiak.
One of the grants is going to Rick Metzger and Woody Kniebel. They are doing research about the history of the Alitak cannery on the south end of Kodiak. In 2017, it's going to be 100 years old. And so in preparation for that anniversary, they're doing all they can to gather photographs and archival materials with the intention of creating a publication to commemorate the 100-year anniversary of the plant.
One of the grants will go to a person who's studying another Kodiak site.
A woman named Susan Morgan, she's a journalist, and she is going to be doing interviews and research and writing about the Glacier Bay Seafoods shrimp processing plant in Yuzinki, which operated back in the 70s.
And the final Kodiak grant will go towards the Kodiak Historical Society and the Baranoff Museum, where Grantham is the curator of collections and exhibits. She says she was not part of the grant review and selection process. The money will allow the Kodiak Historical Society and Baranoff Museum to publish oral histories as part of the West Side Stories project, a series of segments which focuses on cannery history and has aired on KMXT. The money will also go to helping the museum set up their West Side Stories exhibit, which opens in May. Other grant recipients are based in Dillingham and Tenneke Springs. I'm Kayla DeRoche.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KCAW's Robert Woolsey in Sitka, KDLG's Molly Dishner in Dillingham, Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, and KMXT's Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak. Also on the rock, saying, I'll see you at Comfish, I'm Jay Barrett.